where a lot of the stuff that you hear out here today, and I was having a conversation with one of the guys the other day in our Wednesday Bible study. After the Bible study, we were talking a little bit, and again, some of the ideas that he has about Revelation and what it says and so forth are just so far out there that you see this. If you talk to somebody about the book of Revelation, chances are pretty good you're going to hear some things that aren't really so. So what we're trying to do is to study this so that we can get a proper understanding of what the book of Revelation really is all about. One of the things that we talked about last time, and this is what I want you to just continue to keep in mind throughout this study and from now on, if you focus on the theme of the book of Revelation, it's really, really simple, and it really puts the book in basically kind of in a nutshell what it's really all about. Okay, does anybody remember what we talked about with that last time? What's the theme of Revelation? Things are bad. Things are
getting worse.
Gonna get worse. Okay? But in the end, the victory is guaranteed, right? So, you know, if you go through the book of Revelation, that's really what it's about, okay? It talks about how bad things were for the folks then, and it talks about how worse they're going to get, but it also shows very clearly, right, that in the end, the victory has already been assured through Christ Jesus. So, bottom line is, we don't really have a whole lot to worry about. Now, we talked last time about a lot of the background stuff. We were looking at the background of the writing and so forth. We talked about some external evidence. And we talked about the nature of apocalyptic writing, okay, which is what this is, okay? That apocalypse means a revelation or an uncovering or a disclosure. When you talk about apocalypse, the apocalyptic writing, that's what Revelation is. It is an apocalyptic writing, okay? And it is disclosing or uncovering the things that are to come. All right, remember in the first verse we looked at, right, we started here, that's what God revealed, the things that will soon take place. All right, we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. So it's a type of writing in which the theme is developed by the use of symbols and visions. Okay, so that's one of the most important things you have to keep in mind about the book of Revelation. It is not intended to be literal. Right? It uses a tremendous amount of symbolism to bring home a message. Right? The key to understanding Revelation and the different passages in there is basically understanding what some of the symbolism is all about. We talked about the symbolism number. We went through and talked about some different characteristics of apocalyptic writing and so forth, and that one, the symbolism of the numbers is where we left off last time. All right? And we got down through, I don't remember the number here we were talking about. We talked about the number one, we talked about number two, number three, number four, and we left off, I believe, right here. Okay? Now, the sheet that you have, everybody have a copy of the handout? All right, I got some more of them up here. Somebody, who doesn't have a copy of this? All right. Here, would you pass that back there to Lynette, please? Chuck, you want to give some of those out? Thank you. Hey, Ron. Okay. The sheet that you have here, that's for your notes. Hang on to it. That's basically these things that we're talking about here in terms of the numbers, the symbolism of the numbers. So you can have a copy, because I told you last time, I didn't want you to be sitting there trying to write all this stuff down, because you see it's a lot of information there. So I put all that together for you, so you would be able to have that. All right. Okay. So we are in talking about the perfect number. A man took the perfect world number 4 okay, and added it to perfect divine number 3. If you go back in those notes, you'll see those 4 and 3 there, okay? Remember we talked about the family, mom, dad, and child being the perfect number there, divine number, and then the world is defined by number 4 because it has what? 4 corners of the earth, the 4 winds, 4 walls, and people living in cities with walls and so forth. So you take those 2 numbers and you obtain 7, which is the most sacred number to the Hebrews. In all of Hebrew literature, number 7 is the most sacred number, and it also is the most prevalent number in the book of Revelation. Okay? Then, 4 times 3 equals 12. In Hebrew religious thought, it was the symbol of organized religion in the world. So when they're focusing on religion as a body, okay, or as a group, or organized religion, so to speak, then 12 represented that, or multiples of 12. If you look on here, if you go over to Revelation chapter 7, this is a prime example of where folks take things literally from Revelation because they don't understand the symbolism, and they teach a whole doctrine, okay? A whole doctrine that is completely in error, right? There are those of the Jehovah's Witnesses who teach that only 144,000 people are going to go to heaven. Okay, that's what they teach. There's only 144,000 spaces there. Okay, or in other words, there's only that many rooms in the mansion that God's got. All right, so that means that everybody else, and this is how they say it, only 144,000 will actually go to heaven. The rest will live in paradise on earth. Okay? Now, where do they get that from? From Revelation chapter 7. All right? Where it begins in this particular chapter, after this, verse 1, I saw 4 angels standing at the 4 corners of the earth. You see the symbolism here, okay? Holding back the 4 winds. They're holding them back, the 4 winds of the earth, to prevent any wind from blowing on the land or on the sea or on any tree. Then I saw another angel coming up from the east, having the seal of the living God. He called out in a loud voice to the 4 angels who had been given power to harm the land and the sea. Do not harm the land or the sea or the trees until we put a seal on the foreheads of the servants of our God. Verse 4. Then I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel. So, how many people are going to be sealed? No. Exactly. All right. Understand the symbolism. Okay, if you keep reading in the next several verses, what does it do here? It goes through and it talks about the 12,000 from each specific tribe of Israel, right? Okay, and how many tribes of Israel were there? 12. So 12,000 from each tribe of 12 equals what? 144,000. All right, now, if you look in verse 9, after it goes through and it lists all of the 12,000 from each tribe of Israel, look at verse 9. After this, I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count. From where? From every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing where? Before the throne and in front of the Lamb. Now, does that sound like 144,000 seats is all there are in heaven?
No.
You can count those.
You what? You can count those. Absolutely. So if you look at it from the symbolism standpoint rather than the literal standpoint, which is what they do, okay? You see, it says only 144,000. But looking at it from the symbolism standpoint, what does it really say here? Chuck, you had your hand up a moment ago?
Well, if you look at it literally, only the Jews are going to be there.
Okay.
We're Gentiles.
Yeah.
So we're from every nation. Yeah.
But what about verse 9, though, where it talks about those from every nation under heaven? You see? So what does it say in here? What is this part of the text really saying? Okay, but how many more?
Multitudes.
Okay. If you look at the symbolism, again, what is it talking about here? It's looking at this complete number. In other words, the idea basically is all of those who are of Israel, who are going to be saved, in other words, all those who are obedient to God that are of Israel, they're going to be saved. Okay, it is the complete number of Israel. Now, understand, that's not saying all of Israel, all the Israelites, because it's saying all of those who are of Israel, okay, who have been obedient to God, are going to be in heaven. And then, who else is going to be there? Go back to the promise, and we keep talking about this. You see how prevalent this is in the scripture. Go all the way back to the promise of Abraham. What was that promise? Through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. Isn't that really what it's saying right here? After that, I saw a great multitude that no one could count. From where? From every tribe, every nation, you see. So in other words, it's all of those who are amongst the Israelites who have been obedient to God, and all of those from all the other nations, Gentiles who have been obedient to God will be there. Brian?
Tell me if I'm wrong on this, but it's pretty much a separation from the old law and the new law. The representative 144 represents the old law, and all the next verses are representing the following of the new law.
Exactly. It's Jews and Gentiles. You see? But my point here is to show you, this is a perfect example of how you have got to look at these things through the symbol of the numbers rather than trying to look at it literally. Because if you look at it literally, try to pull literal meaning out of it, then you are going to be mistaken. All right? And again, that's a denomination that has their whole doctrine is built around that belief. You see?
Yeah.
Because they're not looking at it with the symbolism, they're looking at it literally. Okay?
What I'm trying to understand is that how do they think they're Jews?
No, they are basically saying, look, only these 144,000, well, the rest of us, includes themselves, are going to be content because we're going to live here on earth in paradise. So, see, they're not concerned about whether they get to go to heaven or not because you're going to live here in paradise on earth. You see? So again, you see this whole doctrine that is built around a misinterpretation of what the scripture says because you're trying to look at it literally rather than symbolically. It will be. They don't have answers for that, at least the ones that I've talked to have, don't they?
Those cited would be a new heaven and a new
right, heaven. Right.
I think that adds to
right. So, again, this is, I think it's one of the best examples that we can look at to see how, if you don't understand the symbolism, you're going to get all kinds of ideas and things that just are not so. So I emphasize again, look at it through the symbolism, okay? All right? And then you will have a much better understanding of what it's trying to say. All right? Any other questions or thoughts on that, Chuck?
Well, I just had a conversation. I asked him, I said, are you one of the 44,000? He said, no.
Yeah.
I said, do you know one? He said, yeah. I thought that odd. What's their relationship like? One's going and one's not.
Yeah. where she knew to be able to get to go with that you didn't, you know.
How do they know?
Yeah, how do they know?
He knew. He didn't have any choice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, again, you see where you can get into just all kinds of, you know, errant doctrines and beliefs over, you know, this is all the kinds of where it starts. Chuck? What the seal look like? Yeah. No, a lot of Chuck's at how does he know? How does he know this guy's going? You know, he's got his ticket, I guess. You know, it's like the Polar Express. I got my ticket, I'm going, right? You know? I'll throw this in extra. I won't charge any extra for this morning. Okay, you're talking with Jehovah's Witnesses about these kind of things. You're studying with them. Here's one of the things that I do when I've had opportunity to study is talk to them about this 144,000. Because here's basically the idea is that, you know, one of the things they don't believe that Jesus is God. Okay, you know, he's a lesser God and all these other kinds of things. So, what I have done is talk to them about, you know, we're going to talk about who Jesus is. Let's establish that. Because, and I tell them right out, if we can't agree on who Jesus is, then we don't have anything more to talk about. Okay? So let's talk about who Jesus is. Now, and I asked them, I said, now, there's 144,000. You say there's 144,000 that are going to heaven, right? Absolutely. They'll affirm that. Now, do you believe that the apostles are part of that 144,000 that are going to be in heaven? Absolutely. The apostles, they're there. Okay? So, do you think that the apostles, if anybody knew who Jesus was, then it would have been the apostles that are part of this 144,000 that are going to be there in heaven and so forth? Absolutely. The apostles knew exactly who Jesus was. Okay? Well, when Jesus appeared to the disciples, after he rose from the dead, the first time, Thomas was not there. A week later, Jesus appeared to him, and Thomas was there, and Jesus told him, you know, reach out your hand and put your fingers in my side, and so forth. He says, stop doubting and believe, right? And Thomas said to him, that is Jesus, what? My Lord and my God. Now, if the chosen enlightened ones, okay, the apostles, part of those who are of the 144,000 are going to be in heaven, if Thomas, one of those, declared Jesus as God, then don't you think he's God? And I had a Jehovah's Witness minister, when I asked him that, looked at his watch and said, I got another point we got to go. Because he didn't have an answer for it. And you know, so again, this is part of knowing the scriptures, okay? The more you learn, the more you know, then the more you're able to talk to folks, you know, about it. Mm-hmm. Right? And to show them what the scriptures really say. By the way, Cindy and I had a couple of young, this is the first time I ever had the Mormon ladies come, the sisters. Usually it's the elders, but we had two Mormon sisters came the other day and wanted to come in and study. So I said, come on, you know. So they came in and we sat down and we studied. And you know, I asked them the question that I always ask them: if I could show you something that you believe that the Bible teaches is wrong, would you want to know that? And they paused for a second, and both of them said, yes, I would. I said, great, come on in, let's study the Bible. I told them I was a minister and so forth. And so we sat down and we studied, and we talked about the Book of Mormon, and they talked about how important it was because they wanted to be able to share, you know, their side of things. And they talked about how important the Book of Mormon was, and but they also believed in the Bible and so forth. And then we went over to Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 through 9, where Paul says, if anybody preach any other gospel than the one I preach to you, let him be condemned. And they kind of said, I knew about the verse over in Revelation, but I didn't know about that. So again, you know, the more you know the Bible, the more that you can talk to people. We had a really good study, by the way. They were real reluctant to come in because the one girl said the last time that we went in and studied with a preacher, it was very bad. Said he was very, you know, I guess he was abusive to them or whatever. You know, they were kind of reluctant. I said, I promise I won't bite you. I said, we just study, we just do what the Bible says. So when they left, they thanked me for it, and so we had a good study. But again, you see, we got to know the Bible. The more we know the Bible, the more we can talk about these things with folks and share the truth of the message with them. Okay, so 4 times 3 is 12, okay? The symbol of religious or organized religion or community and so forth within the church, okay? 7, cut in half, becomes 3.5, which came to express the, now understand this part, the uncompleted, okay? That which was imperfect. It symbolized restless longings not yet filled. Okay? Or aspirations unrealized. Always 3.5 or its equivalents stood for the indefinite, the incomplete, the dissatisfied. Okay? Now, but in it all, was the hope and patient waiting for a better day when truth would be delivered from the scroll, from the scaffold and placed on the throne usurped by wrong. Okay? Now, I think we have one here. In Revelation, the woman is taken care of for a time and a half, out of the serpent's reach. Okay? So there is this. So we find these expressions that are there. Okay? One of the things also, let's go back to the 12 and the 10 and so forth. You look at those numbers, as it talks here about multiples of those numbers. So again, 12 or multiples of 12. 10 and multiples of 10. The same way with 7. 7 and multiples of 7. Okay, is everybody following me on that? All right. Okay, to the Hebrew, the number 6 had sinister symbolism. 6 was the charge that met defeat with success just out of reach. It had the ability to be great, but failed to measure up. All right, keep this in mind when we come to the number 666. In our study, all right. From this idea here is part of that, as the scriptures talk about Satan being a fallen angel. Okay, as you look through the scriptures, we see the evidence that is there of that there was this great war in heaven. Satan and his angels rebelled against God because Satan wanted to. What is it? Was it that he tempted Eve with? If you eat of this fruit, then what will happen? You'll be like God. Okay? Satan aspired to take over God's place. But of course he couldn't. Why? God's all powerful and Satan was a created being. Created by God. Okay? So he couldn't take over, though he wanted to, okay, he tried, but what happened? He fell short. Thus, the association with evil and with Satan of the number 6 or 666, all right? That all power was within his grasp, okay? He was that close, but yet he failed.
That's right.
Okay. And so 6 being just one number under 7, which is what?
Perfect.
The perfect number. Okay. So six then came to represent Satan and evil and all of those kinds of things, all right? Okay, now, from this observation, here's a couple of things we need to keep in mind. This observation, looking at the symbolic use of numbers, it follows that the real numbers which occur in Revelation cannot be understood, okay, I think I got that here, cannot be understood with real numerical value. All right? Not even as round numbers. All right? So when you're studying, forget trying to add up the numbers and say, well, yeah, this one to this one, and that one to this one, and all of it means this, and it applies to this person, and so on and so forth. Forget the literal numbers. All right? And you will come out a whole lot better in understanding. Look at it symbolically. They are purely symbolical, and we must discard our mathematical ideas and seek to discover their symbolical significance. All right? So forget the literal numbers that are there. Much of the misinterpretation of prophecy is based on the false view of the value of numbers that are used by the writer here. That's where we've been saying all along where people get messed up, because they try to say it's literal, and they're not intended to be literal at all. So when you're studying Revelation, throw your calculator out, throw your mathematical, you know, ideas and minds out, and think symbolical. And go back to this sheet that you have, if you have any question or whatever, and that might help you to better understand what it's talking about. Okay? Any questions, right?
Yeah, I do have a question. You just mentioned about number six. And it's seven is complete. Would that not make six incomplete?
Right, it is. But it's incomplete. It's different than the three and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because three and a half can get there, okay?
Yeah.
It's because it's kind of waiting in anticipation of the good things that are going to come, all right? So it falls short, but it's not associated with the evil because it's kind of on the sidelines waiting for good to overcome. Whereas six is associated with evil because it falls short of that. It's almost seven, but it's not quite seven. Again, Satan tried, but he failed. And so that's why six is associated with Satan and evil and so forth.
Okay.
All right? That's just a difference between those two. What else? Ms. Jane? Well, again, that's part of what we're looking at through here is being real careful about not, you know, trying to say, well, this is applying to this person or this, that, because people have been doing that throughout history. Okay? And we have to be real careful not to say, well, this is this and this is that and so forth, because, again, a lot of people throughout history, you know, have been found to be false teachers because they said, oh, this is it, the world's going to end, and we're still here.
Yeah.
You see? So, you know, if we get to those parts, then we'll see more. And that kind of brings us to the next section we need to talk about is theories of interpretation, so that we can understand what's the real proper way to look at the book of Revelation in terms of interpreting it and so forth. So there are several different theories that are used to try to interpret and understand what Revelation is all about, okay? But a proper understanding of Revelation depends entirely on the method of approach that you take, all right? So if you're not careful in how, you know, what the method you use to interpret it, then you're going to usually come out with a false idea. Therefore, we're going to take time to look at the various theories of interpretation. There are a few of them that we need to be aware of. All right. The first one is called the futurist method. And you don't need to write all of these things down again. I'm going to give you kind of a basic breakdown of these. But you don't have to write down all of these different things. You're not being tested on this, okay? Now, starting Tuesday night, those of you here in my class. Okay. The futurist method, all right? This views the book almost wholly eschatological, that is, dealing with the events of the end of the world. And that's what eschatology means. The study of eschatology is the study of last things or the end times. All right? So this method looks at the book of Revelation as their interpretation. They're looking at it entirely as everything in there has to do with the end of the world. Okay, everybody with me on that so far? Now, study of the last things. The futurist looks upon the book as a volume of unfulfilled prophecy. All right, so in other words, what's in there has not occurred yet. For the most part, entirely through the book of Revelation, we're still waiting for it to be fulfilled because it's going to be fulfilled in the future. All right, everybody following so far? All right. Now, you think about this method of interpretation, what are some really kind of logical objections to this method? The first one is, first of all, it's inconsistent with John's statements that the events predicted were in the main part to what? To soon take place. All right, we read that earlier, right? I think that's actually supposed to be verse 4 there. I might have that misprinted there. Somebody check that for me, if you would. 1 and verse 4, I think it is, or is it verse 1? Is it verse 1? Okay, all right. So it's the things, so John says these things are soon to take place. Well, how soon? Okay, how soon is soon? What it does is it leaves Revelation out of the out of relation to the needs of its original audience. If John said these things are to soon take place, and he said that 2,000 years ago, then what was the purpose of writing it and giving it to those people back then? It meant absolutely nothing to them. They had absolutely no connection to it whatsoever, other than their belief at that moment that Christ was going to come back in their lifetime, which didn't happen. Okay? If it's all unfulfilled, then what relation does it have to all of those folks who have already passed on? Alright? This method then reserves the meaning of Revelation for those who will be around only when the end comes. Everybody else just kind of looks at it and goes, well, I see what's going to happen. Don't know when, but it's going to happen. Not in my lifetime. And so what do I get out of it? Go back to what we said at the very beginning. What is the atmosphere that apocalyptic writing is generally written in? Usually in times of crisis, okay, persecution and so forth. All right, were the folks in the first century when this was first written in time of crisis and persecution? Absolutely. Absolutely. So you see, it applied to them. It applied to them. Otherwise, it was completely useless and meaningless to them. To 2,000 years ago, we were reading about something that was going to take place at least 2,000 years after they're gone. Yeah, cool book, but, it doesn't mean anything.
It also was written in language they understood because they knew somebody was going to adapt it.
All right, let's talk about the continuous historical method. All right? This method looks upon Revelation as a forecast in symbols of the history of the church. Right? So it's primarily focusing upon the church itself and what the history of the church is really all about. It makes the book of Revelation prophesy in detail the apostasy of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, the reason that this is the focus here is because if you go back and you look at historical documents, okay, from, you know, now all the way back to the first century, if you go and look in a set of encyclopedias, for instance, and you look up Christianity, what is the historical line that those documents generally follow? The Roman Catholic Church. Okay? So it follows and shows, even to the extent that the Pope that we have today is the successor of Peter, who they consider to be the first Pope. And the history then follows all the way from you know, the first century all the way through and so forth. Again, if you look at secular writings about the church and historical records about Christianity, then generally speaking, that's what you will find. Because that is generally the accepted idea that Christianity followed, that it was the Roman Catholic Church. Okay, now with that in mind, then these folks focus on it being, you know, okay, well, what it's really showing is the falling away and the apostasy, that's what apostasy means, the falling away of the Roman Catholic Church. And how God's going to save his church, you know, from that. Now, here's a question. Simply because the secular historians say that's the history of Christianity, is that really the history of Christianity?
No.
Has the church in its true form been in existence ever since Christ established it?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Everybody said it should be going like this. All right. Remember what Jesus said to Peter when he made his declaration? You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And what will not happen?
The gates of hell.
Exactly.
Prevail against it.
So, you see, if it's true that the church in its entirety, you know, fell away and apostatized from the truth and took the path of Roman Catholicism, then what Jesus said to Peter, I submit, is simply not true. The gates of hell did prevail over the church, and it went astray and has continued to go astray. Is the Roman Catholic Church still in existence today?
Yes.
If all of that is true, then the church has still gone astray. Is that not true? We don't have to follow the line of the secular historians. Simply because that's the way a majority of people went in Christianity and took Christianity, that part of it, down the wrong path, does not mean that all Christianity went that way. Okay. And so it's really it's not a very good approach to look at the book of Revelation as focusing primarily or entirely on the focusing of the Roman Catholic Church, all right? Because, first of all, it puts the book of Revelation, again, completely out of touch with its original audience. Okay? In the first century, they knew nothing about a Roman Catholic Church. They knew nothing about that history at all. Okay? In fact, the Roman Catholic Church really didn't officially exist until the time of Constantine, when he was emperor of Rome. Okay? When he became a Christian, was baptized and became a Christian, which was in 4 something. I don't remember. I think it was 4 something. Somebody knows, you can correct me on that. I, you know, could be wrong about it. 325, is that what it was? Yeah, it, somewhere around in there. That's when the church officially Okay, became recognized by the Roman government as a church, as a viable church, acceptable to the Roman government. Now, it had been, that group of folks who followed that path had been apostatizing since when? Since Peter warned Timothy and Titus that they were going to do it. Okay? All right, remember what he said there? He wrote to them, said, he said, preach the word. He told Timothy, preach the word, be instant, in season, and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, and correct with all long suffering and patience and endurance. Why? Because the time will come when men will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them teachers who will say what their itching ears want to hear. Okay? How long did it take for that to happen? It was already happening in the first century.
Yes, it was.
Okay? You go back and you read John's letters, the letters that he wrote, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, what do you see there? Exactly. You see? So already, when Revelation was written, there were those who were no longer following the teachings that were given to them by Christ to the apostles and handed down. They were already apostatizing from those things. And the apostles, in fact, were correcting and rebuking and so forth those who were going astray with the doctrines.
Amen.
What we have in reality is those who continue following that path, okay, of all these erroneous teachings, claimed the title of the Christian church. Okay? And most likely, and I think the historical documents would say this, and why it became recognized as such, was the majority of folks. I seem to recall something that Jesus said over in Matthew chapter 7 about entering through the narrow gate. Why? Because wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many there be that enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the way that leads to life.
Amen.
And few there be that find it. So, yes, indeed, historically, secularly, the many took the approach of Roman Catholicism. Okay? But the few remained faithful to the teachings of the gospel. Okay? So, again, we find it difficult to focus the book entirely on the Roman Catholic Church. It would really have no meaning for those in the world where Rome holds no sway. Would the book of Romans, or the book of Revelation, rather, really have a whole lot of meaning to you and I today if really what its main focus was all about the Roman Catholic Church? You know what? I could care less what happens to the Roman Catholic Church. I'm not part of it. It used to be. I don't mean that to be unkind, but they're doing their thing. As I have opportunity to talk to those who are from it and to sway them to the truth, great. But what happens to the Roman Catholic Church is not something that I lose sleep over. You see? So, for me to read the book of Revelation and look at it and say, well, yeah, look at what's going to happen to the Catholic Church. It doesn't fit with even the rest of the whole Bible and what its approach to salvation is all about. Right?
Yeah, I just want to say that our alliance should be totally to Christ, totally to God, and no kind of Catholicism can pass you through that.
But you know, we know what you mean, right?
And we have to be very careful. I remember being part, not Roman Catholic, but the Baptist Church. You know, the only difference is the teaching. It is God's holy love. And a lot of people are going to be lost.
Exactly.
Because of that.
And you know, the other part of that, which is a good point, is, you know, why just emphasize and focus on the Catholic Church when you've got all these other denominations out here that are just as wrong as Catholic churches, just on different things in different ways?
Yeah.
You know, all right, we're way out of time here. I'm sorry for keeping you over. We will pick up here next time. Last one on this one real quickly. It leads to calculations of times and periods which have constantly changed throughout history based on events at that particular time. All right? Okay, we'll continue looking at methods of interpretation next time. And appreciate your thoughts and comments.
Thank you, brother.